Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host this evening, Roski Mascagni, and on the panel we have Professor Amin Ra, Ernest McBride Jr., Brother Mashinda, and Brother Ahi. We are the Fantastic Five Plus One. Yeah, so this evening our guest is Dr. B. Dr. B is a colleague of mine's and an extraordinary educator and a purveyor of excellent information. And the topic for this evening is the impact of entitlement culture on Black America. So that's a very interesting topic. So I want to hear what Dr. B has to say about it because I want to get clarity of what he's talking about. Welcome, Dr. B. Glad to have you back. We need to get started with this one.
All right, let's get it started.
Go ahead.
So, I believe you said you had a question, specific question you wanted to ask, or should I just lead in?
I do have a. I want to know who is the entitlement culture, but you can explain that in your presentation.
Well, let's just begin with a identification of to be entitled. To be entitled means to feel that you merit certain either resources or indulgences or other considerations just by the virtue of you existing. So, generally, entitled, in my experience, has had a somewhat negative connotation, because if you think it's yours and that there's nothing required to receive that consideration, that can be a problem. So, in the last 5 years, there's been a maybe even 7 years, there's been a huge shift towards people believing that they deserve special consideration based on past experience or current situation. And we've had a lot of changes in laws and policy and our social constructs that have kind of come about because of public outcry over what's deserved. Because this show is geared towards the experience of the diaspora, I came with that title because every sword has has a double edge, and for Black people in particular, there's been a push towards ideas about receiving things from the society, and whether it's in the legal, economic, or social arenas. And so while we celebrate where there may be benefit, we also have to look at the risk. So when I looked at downsides of entitlement, we've had the rise of popular constructs such as DEI and the social the social attitudes that resulted from the BLM demonstrations and so forth. And so I wanted to look at this idea of entitlement in our community in terms of mindset or desire and see just where some of the downsides would be. Now, just to frame what I'm saying, certainly there have been a lot of challenges and conditions that have necessitated examination for correction. So when you think of slavery, when you think of Jim Crow and so forth, certainly there have been social conditions that have hampered the opportunities of African Americans, laws and other issues. But what I will say is that regardless of anything that came to Black people in the history of the United States, there was always a sense of deep resilience, tenacity, and determination that allowed, for instance, Madam C.J. Walker. She became a millionaire, and she was one of only two of her siblings that were born outside of slavery. So a woman who was born with a family that was mostly enslaved became the first millionaire. When we think of Black colleges, many of them beginning in the late 1800s, and you see Black PhDs emerging out of segregated institutions and certainly out of Black colleges. We've seen that people persevered and excelled and thrived in spite of dramatic conditions. And so I would say that yes, that support and remediation of challenges needed, but has that hampered us? So let me just identify a few areas. So when I looked at the family, when we talk about some of the negative aspects of the family, we moved away from conservative or traditional attitudes about marriage, about family reliance, and we've seen the rise of social programs aimed at supplementing the family in its disintegration and unfunctionality, Section 8 and EBT, AFDC, and others. So, where the family and the extended family slack, we had social programs put in place to supplement, but I'm wondering about the effect of those programs. Let's take Section 8. I know that there are literally three, four generations of people existing in the same housing projects, and there's an ongoing continuation. So is that an adverse effect? In the workplace, people have complained about the notion of quotas and so forth, and has that had an adverse effect on people seeing themselves as competent, or do they perceive themselves as needing programs to advance versus the old adage, working twice as hard to be even half as good? In the social environment, we see a lot of challenges with particularly homeless in encampments and on the streets, and If you ever go down to Skid Row, you'll see an abundance of us, and I know that comes out of the criminal justice system and the penitentiary, and a lot of people can't make it work, but I just see that many have just abdicated themselves to just existing in the social environment because they can. And I'm down at 6 in San Pedro a lot, and the ability to camp out and just be brought food. Like we bring, my organization brings stuff all the time, and there's a whole trade in these goods that all these organizations bring, and I'm wondering, is that even healthy or helpful? Even though I'm a do it because I feel like we need support where we can. In education, there's been a tolerance for lack of effort or insufficient effort. I've noticed that, for instance, in California, many school districts are adopting a 33 as a passing grade versus a 60. And so I wonder what impact that has on young people and their attitude about striving for excellence, no matter what, and putting in work. In the criminal justice system, we've had no cash bail, non-charge for certain crimes, early releases. And does that do well by the community? Meaning, we saw when in California they instituted a $950 or less shoplifting provision that if you came in and stole dollars or less, they wouldn't charge you. And so we see stores moving out the community, like Rite Aid, because they were hit so hard that those resources have left our community. And so I'm wondering if extra consideration about just lawlessness has hurt us. And then finally, in terms of health, there's been an endorsement of unhealthy lifestyles and so forth. For instance, there's a controversy recently about limiting SNAP and EBT to not include unhealthy foods. And people are in an uproar about resources being limited in their scope. And I just wonder how that permissiveness impacts us. And the final thing I'll say before I turn it over to the group for the discussion is there's a scripture in 2 Thessalonians 3:10. It says, "For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule: the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat." And it's not just about work per se. It's about having a culture of self-sufficiency, of discipline, of hardworking, never give up attitude, and setting ourselves on goals that has been eroded. And I just wonder where the community is with that. So I went through a whole bunch of stuff. I said that many of these programs and policies and other things may have been literally a trap and a have unintended consequences. And so, that's my statement to the group that have we been damaged in ways that are kind of imperceptible, but may impact us for decades to come, in terms of us flourishing as people. I'll say one last thing. When I first got to my job, I had a colleague from Nigeria. And this colleague said, he told me every check he sends X percentage of his monies to sponsor young people at home while they go to university or whatever. So he had an obligation to ensure that others were working hard and supported in the system of education so that they could thrive. And what I'm seeing in terms of people of African descent in the Americas is that a inordinate amount of the African American persons in the society, Nigerians and other foreign-born blacks are outpacing black Americans that have been here for generations, and in the most difficult fields like engineering and medicine and even law, that the attainment levels are so disproportionate in these high-end fields that it begs the question. Because you think about if it was only an issue of race, everyone would be doing bad. But we see that some with traditional values and a work ethic being propagated through the family and highly demanding culture, that their attainment is dramatic. And so I just posed it to the group. Have entitlements in terms of social norms, in terms of policies and programs, have they had a negative effect? And is it time to re-examine how we engage with those things? So I'll leave it at that.
Very, very interesting, Dr. B. And there's much that can be said about what you brought this evening, because when you're dealing with an oppressor and they are always on the assault to keep you in a position of subjugation, whenever you have that, they're going to find various ways to keep you in the position you're in. And it seems like the entitlement that's being presented, yeah, I would say that yes, in a way, it's to give you an illusion or give you a thought that if I don't have to do this because I can go here and there and somebody will give me something. Or this program will give me something that I need. And it kind of kills incentiveness. So I'm gonna go to the panel. And
I'll just say, before you go, you made me think of the term Trojan horse. And I always think about that when something is offered, what's really going on? Is there something, a motive that's unhelpful included within that? So yet you sparked that in me.
There's always a price in gifts. People think they're getting the gift, but there's a price behind it. Okay. Brother Ahi, your response. Are you there? There you are.
Yes, brother. I would like to respond, but not at this time. I just want to ask the professor, doctor, where are you from, bro?
I was born in San Diego, and I've lived here for 30 years
Where
in
your
LA.
people from? Where your people from?
My father's side is from Virginia, and my mom's side is from Missouri and Arkansas.
Are you an African?
I have African descent. My father's black.
Okay, so your this this is directed toward people of African descent descended from people who were enslaved. Is this what this is directed toward?
Well, the nature of the program is about people of African descent and who came through the slave trade. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I do have some questions, but I just rather wait until other people have asked questions.
Okay, because more so, this is more of a response, just like a topic. But yeah, definitely can ask questions. Brother Mashinda.
Yeah, good evening. Welcome back, Dr. B.
Thank you, sir.
I think that question has been talked about a lot, as we in a line of work that we all do, I've been working with people professionally on the front line for many decades, criminal institutions, educational institutions, private institutions, and I say institutions, I'm just saying, in that capacity, dealing with dealing with the underdog, the people that's afflicted. I'm included in that myself. I don't separate myself from that group of people, because my research, my coming into understanding afforded me a chance to step outside and see the bigger picture of what's going on and how we as a people have been, how we were afflicted, how we continue to be afflicted, and assaulted and subjugated, as Brother Rasaki, all these different terms, so to be able to look at it, kind of do an out of body experience almost and say, let me see what's going on. And when I studied slavery, and I'm no expert on none of the subject matter, but I have years of research and understanding, I have my basic understanding. So when you talk about slavery and Jim Crow, and last night we were on the show, I talked about Hurricane Katrina. There's a documentary on that, and that is a macrocosm. I don't even call it a microcosm of how we in America, and that's where that's all I'm concerned about, the brothers and the sisters that live in America, and how we are treated, So one day I took a class in administrative law. It was one of the city attorneys in your town, in where you from, San Diego, Dr. J.R. McGrory, white guy, and he taught me about institutional racism, And what I got out of that in a gist was that there are rules and regulations and policies and laws that are in place wherever we're at, and it could be weaponized and used against the people. The law, I'll just say the law, for example, in the court system, which I worked in the court system, things could be a matter of interpretation. So I'm not going to stay on it all night, but what I identified that since there is and all it has been all my life, what I've seen, there's always been a double standard, a different standard for Black people in America versus anybody else. So I said all that to say that you talk about what we once were in terms of as a collective, in terms of resilient people. You mentioned Madam C.J. Walker and so forth, that I can name a few others as well. I can name some modern day doc, Brother Robert Smith, a billionaire. I could name other folks that have made it to the top, and so to speak, monetarily, financially, things like that. But at the end of the day, there has been, in my experience, in my walk of life, that we catch hell, and when we try to aspire to be independent, we have the Black Wall Street examples, and we could talk about other things where we're trying to do for self. We even tried to integrate with these fools. And when I say these fools, I think people know who I'm talking about. We just wanted a fair playing field. We had our own sports systems and cultural systems in place. But anyway, that institutional racism has existed. It still exists. Project 2025, I don't know how you feel about that, if you think that's some kind of mythological a creation. No, that is in play, because what I read about it, and then I compare it to, I'm in Louisiana, and when I see what the governor's doing in relationship to the jargon that's in Project 2025, some things are verbatim in terms of the revamping of the criminal justice system, the increasing in penalties and things like that as it affects us. Well, didn't say, okay, the Black man will do more time than the white man, but so so one might say, well, if you don't do it, then you won't have to do more time. Well, okay, but at the end of the day, all I'm saying is that when you're as a people, when you're operating from a deficit, when you're operating from a deficit from your inception, from the beginning, when I had parents that taught me, say, hey man, never give up, keep your head up, and fight like hell, and keep going and get what you came here for, and that kind of thing. So it's called self-esteem. So when the powers that be, and that's who I'll just say, some powers that be, when they have the ability to circumvent, to be able to rearrange your self-esteem, to burn you out. People say, I'm tired. The folks you deal with downtown, because I don't care who they are downtown or who lives in the projects. Nobody wants to be like that. Nobody wants to live like that. But you accept your condition, and if you have the fort in turn, if you have the fortitude, if you have the self-esteem and the grit, and the struggle, you're gonna, by any means necessary, you're gonna overcome that. You're gonna overcome that. But when you don't, when but when you're tired, or you don't have the mental or the psychological tools to deal with what's presented on a regular basis, oh man, it's tough. I deal with ignorance every day, and I use that word meaning you don't know, you don't understand. But it's some brilliant potential out there. The potential is off the charts, what I deal with for the last several decades. But making it stick, and I take credit in certain things where some of it has stuck, and people have went on to be productive citizens and try to make good for themselves and their families. But man, when you got this, it's like a force out there that's intentional about trying to keep you back and to keep you down. Oh man, no telling what we might do. No telling what might come out of that. So we're dealing with the aftermath and the current situation, the fallout of this in this system that we live under, you know, because we're governed by something. There's laws in society. And back to what my instructor was talking about, this institutional racism, he out of his mouth said, yeah, it's weaponized, you know. And that's when I, you know, and I was a young person, very young, when I introduced it, when he introduced, and I've been paying attention to my jobs and things that I've been involved in, and I verified. I said, man, this is what he was talking about, you know. But I don't go on the job and shoot everybody and trip out and so forth. You know, I try to say, okay, let me think of another strategy. But that bootstrap theory about, you know, hey, I heard somebody say, you know, that bootstrap theory is like, hey, you know, it's kind of like it'll solve anything. You know, if you had, if you, it won't, like, so I don't know who it was, but they said, if you had diarrhea, if you don't make it to the bathroom, you're gonna have a problem. You can, it boots that, that's not, in other words, when you're sick, you're sick. So, and I'm trying to make, I don't know if that's just a metaphor or whatever I'm trying to say, but it's kind of like, you know, pulling yourself up from your own bootstraps. The old saying is, if you don't have no straps, if you don't have no boots, and I'm looking at the straps and the boots is self-esteem. The teachers that are that we had when we were little, that were that taught us some things and passed it on to us, that empowered us. And you know, I played on championship football teams coming up, you know. I mean, and it wasn't all black folk. Had white coaches, some of them. They didn't care. They dealt with us, but they taught us how to win. I didn't care what color they was. We know. I mean, I'm down with black folks, but I did, at that time, this dude was just trying to say, "Hey, let's just win," you know, like old boy from the Raiders. Just win. We and he taught us how to win, and so I that's why I have a winning attitude. Like, okay, I'm not going to be defeated, although I've been defeated. I'm not undefeated. But I'm saying is, I'm getting back up. But our youngsters, man, they don't know all this, and so. And the ones that are current in this time, oh man, they catching hell. They catching hell. And a lot of them give up. A lot of people give up. We're dealing with different generations that are downtown LA. It ain't just the same guy that was in the 1960s down there. He might have been down there for different reasons. But the problem, if we rely on these systems, the job systems, the religious systems, the political systems, and all these different fronts that Dr. Welsing talks about, and Neely Fuller talks about these different fronts, these different sectors of society that we're confronted with, education, religion, law, all that. If we are subjected to assaults and things like that, then man, it makes it a very difficult process. So all in all, you talked about entitlement programs and things like that. Yeah, there are some out there that's abusing it, but I'm a firm believer that most people don't want to be on welfare. You know, most people want a job. Most people want fairness, but you know, they give up at certain points, you know, because of that. Don't, you know, because they hadn't been taught certain things. So anyway, I didn't prepare for this. I just kind of off the top of my head kind of wanted to share some of my thoughts. I'm not mad at you, of course, because you provoked thought and discussion. You know, you have a brilliant mind, and I don't think you come with the intention of saying, you know, one way or the other. You just saying, "Hey guys, what do y'all think about this?" And I appreciate that discussion, but I just wanted to give my input in this discussion. But you know, hey, keep doing the positive things that you're doing, and if you can make it, you know, with your organization, and if you can help somebody, you know, man, I love that. You know, thanks for coming again.
All right, Dr. B, go ahead with your response.
Yes. One thing that was interesting in the Project 2025 piece, I've always regarded that whole thing as if somebody is putting out a playbook and you can't counter it, like if the other team tells you all their plays and there's no active work to counter it, I mean, that's quite a statement in itself. Like the Project 2025 debate has gone on for let's say a year and a half. And if you know this is what's coming, I don't know about being fearful. It's all, there's always a counter. There's always in chess or anything, there's always, except a checkmate, a counter. And so I look at that whole thing as there was a lot of fear around it, and not a lot of and I'm not saying for you per se, I'm just saying in the general discussion. Literally somebody said that they're this is their playbook. And I don't know how it's not countered. And so and when you said institutional racism, it made me think of institutionalization in general. Like people go to prison and then get out and be back in 3 months. Like they become institutionalized. And I'm thinking, reflecting on the institutionalized part as, I said that, I know people personally who are four generations deep in the projects. And when is the point of becoming, of deinstitutionalizing ourselves? And I know there are significant barriers towards that. And then finally, the bootstrap piece, you made me think of something I saw today. I saw this viral picture of these high school students from Memphis. And they took a picture and they had literal, like, racks of money. Racks meaning, $1,000. And they had racks upon racks of money. And this is their picture. I'm like, where is this? First of all, where is all this money coming from? And second is, what's the impetus to say, hey, I've got these thousands and thousands of dollars, because the, I'm just gonna say, we got, even if it's legit, we got money. I was just at a large scale event in Florida a few weeks back. And if I could, I can't tell you the amount of cigars, liquor, parties, yada yada yada, that was just flowing. And when I think about the money I see in all the Hellcats, and that's a high-end muscle car, Hellcats, and all the toys and extravagances, when is some of that going to be turned towards investing in us? Because my whole thing has been, and I've always said this, that in the Black Wall Street communities, in the segregated communities, the stratas were amazing, and you had people thriving. Like I said, you've had Black colleges for 150 years. And so it's not like we're behind the eight ball there. It's just, where's our mental in terms of feeling like we should be able to, enjoy the luxuries? Because as you said, Mr., there are so many people who are down and out. And is there the idea that someone else is going to take care of that? Where are we with sponsoring a kid to college or their education, or taking people in and, getting rid of some of the conspicuous consumption, as I remember in Karanga's book talking about conspicuous consumption. I echo that. When are we going to stop, existing off that and sow into us and do maybe the hard work of giving out bootstraps? So, thanks for engaging, and I think iron sharpens iron in this regard, and I appreciate it.
All right. All right, good, good. Okay, Ernest.
I don't know. I'm kind looking at it kind of like what Mishinda was saying, because like my, we are, I'm looking at black people like we come along, and my dad always taught me, hey, you as good as any white guys. In fact, you better than most of them. So I've always had that belief, going through school and playing sports or whatever I was doing. But, coming through school, maybe I'm brainwashed with the education system, but my thought is they're trying to get you educated and emerge into the society that exists. But like you were saying, Roscani, but there's you, he'll always tell me you gotta prepare yourself and be prepared. You've certain kind of job, you gotta know as much as the next guy, and you gotta try to be better than them, than the white guy. But you're trying to, my thought is they're trying to merge us into, into the society as it exists. Because, when you go all through school, they teach you different, different trades and skills, and then you come on the job, and then they say, "Hey, we want to know you that you have the ability to follow directions because this is the way we do it," and so that's the way you go by those rules. You work for IBM, you do it the IBM way. You don't come in there and do it your way. Because I used to have that problem with guys out on the ships that I was a project manager working electronics, and we had a guy coming in. He was changing every night. We'd align the radar system, and then the next day we come in, it's out of alignment. So he thought he knew more than the engineers and scientists that designed this thing, and so he would change it. So we eventually had to go to the captain to stop him from coming. He's the first class. He was in charge of the radar, and to stop him from coming in there doing that shit. Because, man, you have to do it the way they want you. The book says to align it this way, and this is the way you do it. You don't take it upon yourself. But then, and I've met a lot of people along the way that have been on the welfare system. And like doctor was saying that, I think that's, there's a lot of people on there. They don't want to really be on there, but I talked to friends of my friends of mine, guys, they'd have girlfriends on welfare, and they say, "Well, my biggest problem is babysitting." One, is to afford a babysitter. I go to work. So I'd rather go to work than to receive these welfare checks, but I can't afford the babysitting. And then the rules of the welfare thing is that you can't, there's certain things they don't allow you to do. If you make over a certain amount, then we're gonna punish you and take your money away. So they say, "Well, it's better off for me not to work. Because if I go get a job, I can't make enough money to pay a babysitter and pay the rent and the utilities and all that." And so they kind of, a lot of people think, well, they want to be in that system. They don't want to be in there, but the way the system's rigged, you can't get out of that. And I got a niece now, this on there. She's got skills where she took pipe fitting. If they want to do better on their welfare system, why don't you job train these? Because I've heard people talk about that. They like to be trained for different jobs so I can get off of this. But I think that's against the way they got the rules set up against them to keep them on that. So I think, like Mashinda said, that's probably part of the racism thing to keep you down and to keep you in that mold. So I don't think a lot of people really want to be in the situation they're in, but you just have trouble getting out of it. Need a little help to get out of it. So I don't know, it's probably a thousand different reasons why, but you know, people do what they do. But then I see now, like, you know, the last couple of meetings we had, they're saying was, blacks, we need to get together with ourselves and do our own thing. So now we've been put, we was brought up and trained to be in the white system. And then now we've been pulled back. Hey, let's do one of our own and be with the blacks. So that's confusing a lot of people.
Yeah, high diversity of thought. All right, go ahead, Dr. B.
You know, one thing that I've told young people across my time is I'm probably the biggest slave in the room in that I'm fully in the system, whether it's financial, paying back financial aid, whether it's mortgage, whether it's all these things that like, I really appreciate what he said about sometimes, you know, they change the game and they want you in the system. Like, you can go bankrupt and get your credit back in a year because they need you in the system spending and borrowing the interest above your means. And I think that's something that's vastly overlooked is debt and wage slavery and how, you know, people chase, once again, conspicuous consumption. I gotta have this new car, this new iPhone, or whatever. And you know, like I'll see kids wearing $1,000 shoes to a event, $1,000 tennis shoes, and I'm just like, you know, maybe the, as they call it, the illusion of inclusion, is a mirage in terms of doing it. And I also agree with the confusion about do we individual achievement or cooperative economics or whatever, because I often think about young women with kids and, you know, I always wonder, well, why don't you just pay one of you guys to keep the kids and the rest work, and then you split the thing, you got it for yourself. And you know, like some people pay $1,200 a month for childcare, and it's just, you know, it's just a crazy impediment to getting ahead. Not, you know, I think, you know, I used to have this thing where I figure, you know, all these, they all get an apartment, share the bills. But people don't want to do that. They're trapped between, I got my own space, I don't want to deal with nobody, you know, people in my business, blah, blah, blah. And they don't want to bear down and do what's necessary to get ahead. I was just, and I'll say this, be quiet. I was just watching this thing about this group of Indians called the Patels in America. And what they decided to do is the family went in on a cheap hotel and they have 14 units. They live in two, do all the work, undercut all the surrounding hotels by charging less because they didn't have rent or other things. And then as soon as one family member went out, wanted to get out on his own, they'd invest in him. And it went from these cheap, you know, strip motels and hotels to now they own Radisson's and Marriott's and others. If you dig deep enough, you will find the Patel name in those major hotel brands. And so, you know, we gotta play the long game, so to speak. So,
okay. All right. Professor Ra?
I'd like to say something.
Ahi, you want to go before?
Yes, I'd like to go before Professor Ra because he can sum it all up. I like to say this whole thing is about entitlement. And since when do people of African descent in America have any sense of entitlement when we've never gotten nothing? 1492, Columbus came here. He annihilated all the native people in Haiti. There are no longer any people there that the original people there are a very small percentage in Haiti. They genocide the history of those people. They're doing it then, they're doing it now. Shortly after that, we came to the continent of America, and they not only wanted to enslave people of African descent, they wanted to make their descendants, their descend descendants, their descend descend descendants, they wanted to enslave them forever. For more than 300 years, they led the world in textile. And the textiles in the world for more than 300 years, among other things, they led the world. This is where they got their riches from, among other things, because of free enslaved people labor. These inhumane devils did that for more than 300 years, 400 years, close to that. World War II was from 1941 to 45, and some Asian people, Chinese, Japanese, anybody who look Asian, they all racist. Anybody, if you look Chinese, you were put in that category and you were put in camps. You got reparations. The Indian people, or so-called Indian people, the people who were here before these devils got here, were pushed off their lands, genocide committed against them, and they weren't fully compensated. Some of the tribes that played the game better than the others were favored by the Europeans or the East West Asians, which they really are, were compensated with casinos and monies. Some, even like the Seminoles, who had African descendants back and current Africans in their tribe right now, denied the African presence or the fact that they even considered Seminoles when the American government started paying out that money. Trail of Tears. Everybody is getting compensated but us. And our forefathers and ancestors are the ones who created this country. Entitlement. Brother. These black colleges that are educating our people were named after white people. They had nothing to do with the liberation of my people. And even today, some of those white colleges don't even know who James Baldwin is. So when we talk about entitlement, even with the construction industry, laws that have been made to equal the playing field somehow end up turning out to benefit the enemy who the laws were made to battle. The white construction workers use their wives for minority contracts. They still getting the contracts through their wives. Our churches and our unions. I don't know anybody in the union that was able to retire out of a union at construction. There's a bias here, bruh. There's a bias here against our people, and even the laws that were made for entitlement, so-called, are not benefiting my people. So I'll leave it to Professor Roy.
Okay, well let me jump in on that a little bit. We have Jubal on here. Jubal came with repatriation to Africa. Our challenge is so vast where we have choices that we should be making individually on where do we choose to do what we need to do for ourselves. And it comes down to what you want to do, and you make up your mind to do it. Another thing, we have to think about race. It's a strategic thing. You know, just the concept of race, very strategic, because it comes to a point where some people have actually came together as white or black, Asian or black, or Asian or white, and had offsprings. And this is where all the confusion comes in, is when you start having some babies. So it's a lot to contend with. So I just wanted to add at that Jubal said, go back to Africa. He said, because he don't think that we're ever going to get a fair shake here, you know. So
And I want to, can I say this one last thing? Yes, I understand what Brother Jabbar say, but we've done to this other, this brother is talking about entitlement. We've done everything that America has asked us, our forefathers and ancestors are doing, everything that we've done that has been successful, they got in the way and destroyed it. Everything. We've had hundreds of towns and communities. They were thriving in America. And
dearly noted.
everything we've done, when they say pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps and we were successful, they got in the way. They didn't mean it.
Yeah, of course. The original intent is the same intent. It hasn't changed. So we have some serious work to do, especially with ourselves. Go ahead, Dr. B.
A couple notes. It was Nzinga a devil? Because that is the person who coordinated the slave trade. And she made a deal with the Portuguese and others to facilitate that and deal with the dynamics of Africa. So, when I hear white devil, I mean, obviously, I can't agree with it because I know my mama, my grandma, my grandpa, and I think that's something to put out there as a blame game, because if we're gonna say devils, we got devils within the black community. Biggie said, I was just they they called the cops on me because I was just trying to hustle to feed my daughter. We've always had people who will sell us into slavery for their well-being, and they're not all white.
Did she go and offer, or did they come to her? Did she go and say, look, I got these niggas, and I'm gonna offer them into slavery? Or did they come to
Absolutely.
her with already a system there that they were already got guns and shit pointed at them? What options did she have?
Was she a victim?
They came to her after already invading the doggone West Coast and making the strike pose with the Muslims that were there for the slaves. So she on the outside looking in, so now she want to get in.
So let me tell the whole story.
Maybe she might have been practical, and she was devilish in her answer.
Pardon me. Can we? We're gonna have to move on because.
Let me finish what I was saying, Dr.
B. We're gonna have to move on because. Okay, but let's move on because we're going somewhere else. No, seriously, we're going somewhere else.
Okay,
and
that's
then,
fine.
And then no,
yeah, but let me finish what I was saying.
But I want to moderate so
we can do another show
because this is where this is. Let me just say this. This is where this is. I just mentioned that the race concept is strategic. It's put in place for strategy, and it has been working for many and many thousands, many years. It's been working. I would say hundreds of years. So we want to move on away from that because, like I said, there's people of mixed racial identities, and we don't need to go that deep, not at this point. That's all. I just want to move on so we can get Professor Ryan, and then we have Brother DX. I don't want to get in a back and forth type thing because
can I say my last statement?
I mean,
I didn't get to say it.
Go ahead, man. We got to move on from this.
And the final thing is, when I went to Ghana, they had the year of the return, and they were saying, "Hey, people who was dispersed out, come back home." And you know, Gabon just offered that same thing to Americans of African descent. And I wonder, is that thing, you know, you talked about, you had a guest that talked about Garvey and the White Star Line and all that, or Black Star rather. And is that an answer if there's no fair shake here? But I would say that there's challenges everywhere and in all circumstances. Thank you.
You are true. Professor Rob?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. And I deeply appreciate the discussion today, and everybody made their point. I just wanted to ask a question, and then I'll try to... understand what Dr. Lee. When you say an entitlement program, could you name me one entitlement program that you think polarized Black people or sort of keep them from progress?
That's an excellent question. I don't know that any program polarizes intergroup relations. I don't know if that has any correlation to what I'm saying, at least.
Well, I mean, you said that there's a culture of entitlement, and you started off by saying that, correct me if I'm wrong, that there are some people that this entitlement, it hurts them. You talked about generations in the project, and you talked about a little bit about welfare, and you're saying that these people are not motivated, and they become generational people, like pathogenic, like pathology is a sickness, but pathogenic means that it's a generation or it's passed on. But now I'm asking you, because this is your title, what specific entitlement program that you think was either created for Black people or create problems for Black people in the way you were explaining?
Yeah, when I opened, I went through various levels. I talked about Section 8, EBG. I talked about no cash bail, non-charging for offenses. I talked about
Those are
health
not entitlement.
programs.
Those are not entitlement programs. I
Oh,
would
wait, no
entitlement.
cash bail is not an entitlement?
No.
It's not?
That was legislated for the purposes of people being held who couldn't afford bail. So therefore,
Exactly.
okay, well, that's not an entitlement program is like welfare, like Obamacare, like it's a program that provides some specific service for the uplifting of people. Most people aren't in jail. Don't need bail. And some people, we're talking about like entitlement from the standpoint of Social Security, those type programs, if I'm not mistaken. I'm asking you let's say cash bail. You say that's an entitlement program. Is that correct?
When I mentioned entitlement, I didn't mean specific programs per se. I meant policies, practices, and others that create a sense of entitlement. Not, you're using the formal definition of entitlement program. That's not the piece I'm on. It's overall policies and practices that create a sense of entitlement that I should be able to do X, Y, and Z.
Okay, well,
this
name
is not fair to me.
Policy.
It doesn't have to be
Well, name
it
one of
doesn't
the
have to be formal per se.
Name one of the policies or practices that you think have an adverse effect on Black people. But
well, let's say when you don't charge people for what they've done, they go back out and do more of it. I'd say most of that violence is going to be occurring in their community.
You talking about recidivism,
it's not recidivism if they didn't go to jail in the first place.
Are you saying that? Well, what are you saying? And you said
if they're saying they're not charging people for crime, let's say for instance the shoplifting law that says you can steal under $950 and not get charged. Therefore, people go back in endless times, they steal, and then the stores close down because they can't keep the insurance and make any profits. So they close down stores in the community and people are left with not food deserts, but supply deserts where they can't get anything because the Rite Aid closed down. That's a problematic issue if you don't charge people with crimes, if you don't uphold the law.
So you're suggesting that people who shoplift need to get 5, 6 years in prison so that they don't do it.
Where did I say that? I said they need to be charged appropriately and prosecuted.
Well, what is appropriate?
That's a whole nother argument. I'm saying they're not being charged at all. So
not true.
So if they get 2 weeks,
wait a minute.
A start.
Wait a minute, Machinda can tell you this. When you go in a store and you steal, they charge you with burglary first. Then they break it down to shoplifting when you get to court. But they charge you with a felony. If you intend to go into a store to steal, they charge you with burglary. And then they determine how much or whatever the situation is, and they plea bargain people out. If they arrested everybody for shoplifting and stuff like that and kept them in jail with no bail, they wouldn't have no room. They're the ones that make them systems and policy. The people are not taking advantage of them. They did so the system could benefit from it. But let me just move on. Let me just say this. I appreciate your argument, but, as an African, first of all, there was no such thing as a slave trade in from my studies. You can't call trading human beings a business. That's dehumanization. Second, there's no record of wholesale Africans selling Africans into Europeans for the purpose of enslavement. There's no serious record of that many. Even if Nzinga did participate in it, they brought over a million. She didn't sell all the millions of them. So where did they get the rest of them from? And who are the other ones that were the so-called selling? And how did the ones that were doing the selling end up over here in slavery? But I'm not going to get into that. The point is, Dr. B, there's a lot of issues that African people in this country face that most people don't face. You know what I'm saying? Most people come here voluntarily. You know, they came here voluntarily. The Chinese came here to work on the railroad. The immigrants of today come here to work. When we were enslaved, we had 100% employment. 100% employment. You see what I'm saying? But when we got out of the Holocaust of enslavement and started demanding rights, all of a sudden discrimination came in, segregation came in, and unemployment. They even passed the law that if you didn't have a job, you can go to jail. And they called it being a vagrant or whatever. But my point to you is that the majority of the programs that are called entitlement in this country were not built for African people in this country. The majority of the people on welfare are white. The majority of the people on Medicare are white. The majority of the people on Medicaid are white. We only represent 10% of the population. When I was teaching at school, 40% of the school was on academic probation. Black people only made up 7% of the school. 7% of the population in the Cal State Long Beach. And at the same time, there's 40% on academic probation. But I'm just trying to tell you that they make us be the poster child of to justify cutting programs. So, you know, the lazy black person ain't doing nothing. We need welfare to work and things of this nature. Well, the majority of the white folks, they find reasons not for them not to have to go to work. You go in a white community, you couldn't even tell where the social service program is. They used to line us up to get food stamps. Be lines around the building. You go to the welfare office, and you see all the people hanging out waiting for their appointment. But when you go into white communities, they give them dignity. They give them dignity and respect. My point is that, yeah, there are people that abuse welfare, but a lot of it come from within. Look at all the fraud that goes in by people who sign up people that don't supposed to be signed up, workers that's doing this. You have police selling drugs and operating prostitute houses. I mean, young people, I agree with you. There are a lot of young people that have, they're not the same as when me and Brother Ernest was coming up. There was a time when black people would say, you ain't a man if you can't take care of your family. I don't want to be on welfare. You understand? But then they changed the welfare structure because at one time, men couldn't be in the house with the people on welfare. Then they changed it to families. Then they added general relief. In order to have rich, you got to have poor. So they pay people to be poor and develop a poor mentality. I mean, because if you don't, they'll rob and steal not only from each other, but they'll go up in your neighborhood. So you give them enough to eat. There's a lot that goes into the stratification of this society. Should one man be entitled to $100 billion worth of money in this country? One or two or three people or 10 people have 100, are they entitled to that? And how did they get it? You know, it's like creating a chip, creating a delivery system called Amazon. How did they get it? And then once they get in power, they monopolize it so other people can't duplicate what they're doing so that they can monopolize it. And that's why they say it's only 3 or 5% of people that benefit from the system. Only thing I'm saying is that young people, we got from where we were to where we are, we as black people have made tremendous progress. All of us know. All white folks haven't made it. You know, you got white folks homeless. You got white folks in mental institutions and Asians and Latinos. I mean, but we come a long way politically, economically, and educationally. I mean, you living comfortable. Most of us got food to eat. The people in Gaza don't have, they're eating dirt. You understand? People in Sudan eating dirt. You understand? But because we're in a country where envy, greed, capitalism, vulgar capitalism, racism, and sexism are the dynamics that operate the system. Women couldn't even own property. They couldn't even vote in 1920. We couldn't even go to school once we got out of the Holocaust of enslavement. We had went to all black schools. You understand? And now you got black people because they can exploit them athletically and academically. They go to different schools, private schools. You know, I mean, we've made a lot of progress through struggle. Through struggle and demanding, as Frederick Douglass said, that you get progress. You know, progress is not possible without demand. It's never. And we are. Look at the achievements the black people have made in every field that they allowed us to get into. And now allowed us to play from golf to tennis, you understand, the hockey. We just had a brother, Bubba. Bubba Wallace just won the Indianapolis 500. Why is he the first one? Because they wouldn't let him drive in it. You understand? But once he got in it, he just won. I'm just saying that look at our progress, bro. Look at the beautiful people that did raise their kids. We can always picnic on the poor or those on drugs or those that don't have the esteem. Or those that are depressed because they don't make the lift. But all groups have those people. Look at your children. And look at, I was working in juvenile as I closed, in juvenile for years. And most of the brothers worked there, they were called detention service officers. They would say, oh, well, what are we going to do with this generation? So many black kids in juvenile. Most of them there for runaways, for petty crimes, violation of probation. But there were a few there that were hardened criminals, all right? Hardened violations of law. But they thought that that was reflective of the black community where they were. Like you at Centennial. That's not the whole black community. Centennial is not the whole black community. There's a school called Imhotep in Philadelphia, a black charter school, one of the number one schools in the country, all black. You don't hear about that. But it's easy to picnic on the poor because they can't say nothing bad. But what about the black people that's winning scholarships, that's winning academic achievement? Brother Ernest, you look at Long Beach Poly, how it excelled in sports and excelled in progress of young people. Everybody is not leeching off the system. Most people try and strive. We have a disproportionate amount that we feel bad about. But, you know, they used to call the homeless people hobos and bums. And they were majority white. And they were downtown, or they were hopping on the freight. Now you got families living in trailers, living in SUVs and things of this nature. Watch, some do it because, hey, I want to save my money. I ain't paying all that high rent. You understand? There's a lot of factors going on. Some got mental issues. Some got drug issues. Some got a PST, whatever that stuff you get from the service. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it. But that's not our problem. All the problems and the successes of this society are created, are the result of this society. I'm going to say that again. We are all products of this society. Now, some of us have a different point of view. Some of us can say, oh, our people ain't doing nothing. They ain't going to never do nothing. Why can't we unite? Well, white folks fight the Civil War, fighting in Ukraine, and nobody said, why can't they unite? You understand? I mean, it amazes me that we can sit and picnic on people that some have legitimate reasons to be where they are economically. I mean, they didn't get the schooling they needed. They didn't get the parental guidance they needed. I mean, it's obvious everybody on this show had some good parental guidance, but everybody don't have that. You understand? And even if you do have good parental guidance, there are middle class kids in the penitentiary, working class kids in the penitentiary. You ask, why did you break the law? I just did it. I just did it because, you know, I want to have my own money. I didn't want to live off my parents. But anyway, I think that the entitlement program, if it's any group of people is entitled to all the entitlement that the system has to offer, is African people for what they have contributed from the Holocaust of enslavement, from manumission, from sharecropping, from racial discrimination, from gerrymandering, from economic discrimination, that is still going on today. It's a wonder that more of us have more problems than what we have. That's all I got to say.
All right, go ahead, Dr. B. You're on mute.
Just an FYI for Centennial. It used to be the top school, not black, white, or other, in the entire state academically and athletically, and be all black. So nobody has any misconceptions about that school being alternately great and struggling at different periods of time. So it's been the best in the state. So I will say that. Additionally, I went to San Diego State, and I was an Afros major. I was the outstanding departmental graduate in Africana studies, what they changed it into from Afro-American studies. We struggled on that campus with retaining and getting black kids in, but we stepped up and had a program called Leadership Excellence, which worked through student outreach services, EOP, and all that to get kids with 1.9s and others into the school. So I'm not going to say that it was easy, but if people work hard and are committed, black people can survive in the California State University system, which I graduated from and which I supported through Afros and through support systems. Finally, I didn't come on here to worry about what white people are doing. It's rhetorical to say white people do it too, because they do. That's not a question. Corporate welfare and all that, that's not even in question. What my statement was our certain attitudes and policies and others that create entitlement impacting us. Do we need to return to being very self-sufficient, very self-disciplined, and others? That's my key crux. Nobody is saying that black kids and black people can't thrive and that all black people are not doing what they're supposed to, because obviously I don't know anybody in my friend group that don't have a master's degree. I'd say probably most of the people in this call are extremely highly educated and doing well. So I don't know where the misconstruing of what I'm saying to say that people can't excel, because that's not the street I'm on. But I'm definitely not here to worry about and blame others. I'm here to worry about and examine how the Black community could be better served by us, and how we view the system in which we live in. I'm not on the victim tip. I'm on overcoming. I'm on beating a system that, yes, has done all these things, and yet here we sit with a Black president, with congressmen, with you got Hakeem Jeffries, all of these people. You got our own congresswoman out of here, Maxine, with a net worth of $170 million off $170,000 salary, Kamala and others. So it's not a blame game. It's a time of saying, hey, let's reflect on what's going on with a lot of these attitudes and engagement with programs, because people have made it without certain programs. They made it in spite of. And that's where I'm at. So I just wanted to provoke discussion and analysis, and us moving forward and being great. And that's where my involvement is here. And Mr. Moore certainly knows that that's where I'm at. And Professor Ra, respect your position, and we need all the positions. There's a plaque of you in Centennial's Wall of Fame because I believe in your contribution, and I got it put up there after Mr. Moore's urging. So know that I respect where you're coming from, and also there's different lenses that I'm coming from. So and I do have to respectfully disagree about Nzinga, that you go to the Smithsonian and see what they say about it, or just look at the research online. So I have my research is not faulty. Difference of opinion, but Nzinga protected her kingdom. She wasn't no victim. She was very astute and a serious warrior. And so she was a master of statescraft in that, and she did what she felt she had to do, which was move people into transatlantic slave trade. So I thank all the brothers for the engagement and the lessons. And I think more often than not, we share more common ground than not.
Yeah, well, the intent of this platform is not to get into debates. It's to state information and keep moving forward, because going back and forth, and especially with too much, energy, it's supposed to be a nice, calm, relaxed type situation. But the inception of this program this evening came with some things that wasn't really clear. So I think with clarity, things can go a little bit smoother. So let's go to Brother DX, and then we closing out.
Yes, greetings everyone. Greetings, greetings, namaste. It is indeed a pleasure to be on this conversation. I'm gonna try to make mine as brief as possible. I think Ross, you already know kind of where I stand when it comes
Well,
to
see, he brought up a topic, and he just wanted people to respond to it. It really wasn't too much a
just talking
question
about
thing.
Yeah, about the entitlement. I'm just going to make a quick response.
Yeah.
I don't see. I'm agreeing with everyone else. I don't see any programs that actually, entitle us as a people. All the programs we know are systematically made to empower, the aristocracy, and the aristocracy doesn't have a color, in my personal opinion. I think the aristocracy is definitely melanated. I think a part of us being separated is the fact that, we have allowed that aristocracy to identify us, because we call ourselves Black, we call ourselves African American, but we're Negroes. You know what I mean? And we got away from being Negro. And that was the closest thing to us identifying ourselves as a people, because in the 1800s, they took all the natives that were indigenous here, that were Choctaw or Comanche, Osage, and some of the other tribes that y'all probably never heard of, the Yamasee. And every one of them, they put us on the census as Choctaw. I mean, excuse me, as Negro. But then later on, we got away from being Negro to being called Afro-American to African-American to now basically being Black or whatever, and not identifying ourselves as Negro. And once we identify ourselves completely as a people, as one whole people, we can come together on one thing and agree on one thing. There's too many organizations and there's too many Black hands behind the curtain, so to speak, of sellouts, because we'll do anything for money. And that's been part of the problem. Even the whole concept of slavery is it was for money and for wealth or whatever to achieve something material or take land, because a lot of land was taken. And even now, the land we own, everybody getting taxed. And we're doing some research on Queen Coinga, also Queen Khalifa in California. That's where they get California from. We was here first, and that's, I'm gonna end and land on that. Thank you, everyone, and good night.
All right, thanks. So, all right. Professor Rob, we're gonna go ahead and close. I appreciate everybody coming this evening, and we're gonna close on out. Professor Rob, what's our topic for next week?
Are we going to talk about the Watts Rebellion and the benefits and the things that we got out of it and the institutions that we built from it, the Watts Rebellion 65 in comparison to the LA 92?
Okay. So next week, we got Brother Chiwara coming back. And the topic is the subtle divide between perception, perspective, aka reality, and what is real. So that's next week on Wednesday. So we're going to close each one teach one and Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have an excellent evening.
I'm
Thanks for
just
coming.
going to go on record to say that the doctor says he was from San Diego State. I don't like them, and I don't like LA State, because those were the two teams that beat Long Beach State in 63 and 64. We were undefeated till we ran, we met them. So.
All right.
Well, oh my goodness. Yeah.
All right. Everybody have a good evening.
Great school, though, because my son-in-law married to my daughter. He graduated from there. So,
Outstanding.
yeah,
All right, folks.
okay.
All right now.
Peace.
Okay.